Welcome back.
Hi, guys. Hello, guys and women, I should say.
And all friends and fam.
And aliens and beyond. Ghosts and etc. of the universe. Welcome to Killer Babes.
And we are on episode 8.
This is episode 8. What's going on?
Ah, man, not much.
Been a weekend.
It's been a weekend.
We had ourselves a little fun today.
We did.
We went out of the town.
Yes.
Of the city, I guess I should say.
Yes.
Ah, the city of Providence. What can I say?
I didn't realize that it had a smell, and I still didn't smell it, but we went out with my friend from college, and shout out, hey, if you're listening, and she was like, your city kind of smells. And I was like, does it really? I was like, in comparison.
We rolled the windows down for half a second because it's like, God forbid, it's like 50 in New England. We're like, oh my God, it's summer. We roll the windows down. It's like, oh, those are going to go right back up. Like
melting tires.
It smells like burning tires.
But really, in comparison, in like cities around us, like Boston is a little smelly, yes, in parts. But New York City I've been to, and that smells way worse.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, like, Providence does not smell.
It was particularly bad today. I don't know what was going on.
Yeah, so, I mean, she was right. It did smell.
She's not wrong.
But it opened my eyes just to, like...
Open your eyes and your nose.
My nose was open.
Unfortunately.
And it was ripe.
Yum.
But we went to a really cool arcade, and it's all old games.
Yeah, it's this place called Free Play Bar Arcade in Providence. If you guys ever had the chance, go check it out. It's super cool. I don't even like video games. Yeah. And I also hate the 80s. And that's exactly
what I like the 90s. It's like 80s, 90s.
Me too. 80s and 90s are extremely different.
Well, the 90s are like mixed in there a little.
Kind of, but like the games are so old. It's like original, a lot of original video games that are like from the 80s. And they keep playing like 80s movies on repeat there. And they play a lot of 80s music.
I don't hate
girls
the 80s
just
want to
have fun. I hate 80s music.
Oh.
Although I do like that song. But I still like the place.
Yeah, I just want to have fun.
I just want to... She's not wrong. Cyndi Lauper had a point. But yeah, you pay like a cover charge to get in, and then all the arcade games are free.
Which is crazy.
You don't have to keep putting in stupid coins because coins like don't even exist anymore. So I guess that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoy it. And I am with you. I don't even like video games, but I really enjoy going there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bar there, so hello. You can't not enjoy it. You get your drink and you go freaking play your Miss Pac-Man all night. Oh, and
Skee-Ball all night.
Mm-hmm.
Skee-Ball and air hockey.
Air hockey. They had a four-way air hockey.
Which I think that's pretty modern, but...
I've never seen one.
It was revolutionary to me.
It rocked my world.
Yeah.
It was...
intense.
So intense.
Like, it was intense.
Your senses need to be all there because there are just... The puck is coming from literally every single angle. You got to be on your game, defense all the way.
Yeah, sweat was dripping because I was so concentrated.
Yeah, down every crevice.
But yeah, so if you're in the area, go check it out because it's a fun time.
Yeah, just a little shout out. I like that place. So
yeah, and I like supporting
non-spawn, but go check it out though.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think we can dive on in because this is a big case.
All right. Yeah, so we might have gone to Providence tonight, but... This week, we're bringing you guys a story from the actual greatest city in America, if I do say so myself.
Bold.
Bold. That's right, folks. We're talking about Boston, Massachusetts tonight. Boston, Boston, Boston. It's the home of the Red Sox, Dunkin' Donuts, and Mark Wahlberg.
Marky Mark.
The International Center of Higher Education, the capital of the Commonwealth. And as it happens, home to some of the most notorious killers this country has ever seen. This week, we are bringing you the story of the Boston Strangler. Mwah-ah-ah-ah.
Stay tuned.
Well, yeah, just keep listening. But to start, you guys may have noticed that our album art is a little different this week. It's not your normal red glaring Killer Babes
logo.
That is because we had a little help this week from our friend, Serial Killustration. They are an amazing artist from England who draws infamous serial killers, which is just all you could ask for.
It's pretty cool.
It's really cool. Everyone should go follow them right now on Instagram at Serial Killustration. You'll see all their amazing work, and you'll see the work that they did for us on this episode. Also, they have a link in their Instagram to their Etsy, which you guys should also go check out. We just ordered our own serial killer Zine, which still a little confusing about what that is, but we'll check it out when it gets here.
Yeah, it looks like a book, like a handmade book.
Yeah.
I've never heard of the word before.
Zine. I thought it was like short for magazine, but I don't think it is.
No, and I think it, honestly, I don't know.
But I think it's just like every page has...
like a booklet.
Yeah, it has a drawing of the serial killer, and then the other page has a description about them. So it's entertainment and education and spooky. So it's a win-win-win situation, and I think you guys should all check it out. Go get yourselves one. And, yeah, thank you, Serial Kill Illustration, for helping us out this week.
I couldn't wait. I just Googled it while we were talking.
Okay.
So a Zine, Z-I-N-E.
Not a zing.
Not a zing. Zine. It's short for magazine or fanzine.
Oh my god, that's what I said.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a small circulation, self-published work of original or appropriated texts and images, usually reproduced via photocopier. Zines are either the product of a single person or a very small group.
Okay, got it. That makes sense.
And now you know.
And now you know. Wow, this podcast is just so
you can really
so
learn
informal.
A lot.
I mean, not informal.
Yeah, educational.
Educational.
Informational.
Informational.
All the ationals.
Cool, fresh, fab, fun, hip.
I don't know if we can say those all words in the same, like, I don't know if that's copyrighted.
The word boxes? Fun. Oh, that's...
the box.
They're just adjectives. I don't think anyone can arrest us.
Please don't arrest us.
Anyway, thanks, Serial Killustration. Love the art.
Thank you so much.
With that, I think we're going to jump in. So, the Boston Strangler was an American serial killer who murdered in the Boston area between June 1962 and January 1964. His victims included 13 single women between the ages of 19 and 85 who were murdered throughout the Boston area, mainly through strangulation. The exact number of his victims and his identity itself proved a matter of great controversy. So, we will begin our story on the night of June 14th, 1962, when 55-year-old Anna Slezers was found dead in her ransacked apartment in the Back Bay area. She had been strangled with the belt of her own housecoat, which was found tied in a bow around her neck. There were no signs of forced struggle, and no neighbors reported hearing any screaming, suggesting Anna let her killer into her apartment willingly. Local police had never seen anything like this before, so they just assumed it was like a random kidnapping gone wrong. However, during the following months of the summer of 62, several other women ranging in age from 65 to 85 years were murdered in similar circumstances in the Boston area. With each victim, the subject used for strangulation was always tied in a bow around their neck. By the time the harsh New England winter was in full swing, the suspect began attacking younger girls. In December of 1962, 20-year-old student Sophie Clark was killed. 3 weeks later, 23-year-old Patricia Bassett was found strangled. The following victims included women of a range of ages. Most of the victims were found with their own nylons wrapped several times around their neck and tied with a signature bow. The murders occurred generally twice a month with a brief respite from the end of August to the first week of December in 1962. Again, the victims ranged in age from 19 to 85 years of age. All were sexually assaulted.
Okay, I think we have to back up a little and just give a little background on what's going on here.
Give it to them.
Okay. A couple of years before, the Silk Stocking Murders began, which was a series of sex offenses that began in Cambridge, Massachusetts, around that area. A smooth-talking man in his late 20s went knocking door-to-door for young women. If a young woman answered the door, he would introduce himself as a talent scout from a modeling agency who was looking for new models. If she was interested, he would tell her that he needed to get her measurements. Many women expressed interest and allowed him to measure them with his measuring tape. He would then fondle the women as he took their measurements. Several women contacted the police, and this man was referred to as the measuring man.
If a man came up to your door and said, that he was with a talent agency and you could be a model. He just needed to measure you. Would you let him?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm just picturing he's pulling one, like, literally out of his sleeve. And it's just like, I have a measuring tape right here. Like,
you're like, that's my worst nightmare. I have not been preparing for my beach body.
Yeah. Come back maybe in 4 more months.
Yeah, I'll totally be ready.
In March of 1960, police caught a man breaking into a house. He confessed to the burglary, and without any prompting, he also confessed to being the measuring man. The man's name was Albert DeSalvo. The judge sentenced DeSalvo to 18 months in jail, but he was released after 11 months for good behavior. Following his release, he began a new crime spree throughout Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New Hampshire. During this spree, DeSalvo, while dressed in green handyman clothes, broke into over 400 homes and sexually assaulted over 300 women. After nearly 2 years of this, the violence of DeSalvo's crimes grew to the level of fatal. In 1962, DeSalvo made his first kill with the murder of Anna Slessor, who we opened the story with. While police throughout New England were in search of the Green Man, Boston homicide detectives began their search for the Boston Strangler. Due to citywide panic, the Boston police chief transferred nearly all of their department's resources to the search for the so-called mother killer. They even brought in a psychic to inspect the clothes of the victims.
Mm-hmm. Okay. By January of 1964, 13 women were dead at this point. And the Massachusetts Attorney General, Edward Brooke, had taken charge of the investigation personally. He created the Boston Strangler Task Force to try to solve the case. Many people believed that at least 11 of those 13 murders were committed by the same individual because of the similar manner in which each murder was committed. It was believed that the woman, who all lived alone, knew the attacker and let him in, or that he disguised himself as a repairman or a delivery man to get the woman to voluntarily let them into their apartments. Because, like, they were saying that there was no reports of screaming, which you would expect. There was no signs of forced struggle. So they assumed that either the victims knew him or he kind of worked his way in as a trusting person of society. In every case, the victims had been raped, sometimes with foreign objects, and their bodies laid out nude as if on display for a pornographic snapshot. Death was always due to strangulation, though the killer sometimes also used a knife. The ligature, a stocking, pillowcase, whatever, was inevitably left around the victim's neck, tied with an exaggerated ornamental bow. The series of crimes were often referred to as the Silk Stocking Murders, and the sought-after attacker became known as the Boston Strangler. So soon after this, Mary Sullivan is raped and strangled to death in her Boston apartment. The killer very, very creepily left a card reading Happy New Year. We read it was literally in between her toes. So yeah. When police found her, there was just a card, like, in between her toes that was like a Happy New Year card, which is bleh. So Sullivan would turn out to be the last woman killed by the notorious Boston Strangler, Albert DeSalvo, seemingly. Police were still hard at work trying to track down their suspect. However, it was DeSalvo himself who enabled the police to close the case. On October 27th, 1964, after raping another young woman, he suddenly stopped right before killing her. The victim came forward to police, saying that a man posing as a detective entered her home and sexually assaulted her. From her description of the man, the police were able to identify the man as Albert DeSalvo. A photo of DeSalvo was published in newspapers, and several women came forward to identify him as their attacker. In November 1964, he was arrested on rape charges and remanded to the Bridgewater State Hospital for psychiatric evaluation.
So, while DeSalvo's getting his psych evaluation, let's take a moment just to look at his childhood. DeSalvo's serial killing career was shaped at an early age. And I think we should do an episode, honestly, on serial killers and their childhood, because I find that really interesting.
Ooh, that sounds like a whole entire class, not one episode.
Maybe we could just do, like, a brief one of just, like, the top three in New England or something.
I mean, this is one.
Okay.
But, like, specifically one person delve more into their childhood rather than just the crimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be
maybe
interesting.
Maybe do, like, a two-part.
We'll find one that is, like, really heavily rooted on, like, their upbringing. And
yeah.
That'd be interesting.
Okay. On September 3rd, Albert Henry DeSalvo was born in Chelsea, Massachusetts. His father would bring home prostitutes and have sex with them in front of the family before brutally beating his wife and children. On one occasion, DeSalvo's father knocked out his mother's teeth and then broke her fingers one by one while she lay unconscious on the floor. DeSalvo himself was sold by his father to work as a farm laborer, along with two of his sisters. He was arrested for robbery and assault and battery. He was then sent to a correctional facility for a year and worked as a delivery boy. In 2 years, he was readmitted to the facility for car theft. After his second parole, DeSalvo joined the army and did a tour in Germany where he met his wife. So after DeSalvo was discharged from the army, he settled down and married his sweetheart, Irmgard Beck, a girl from Germany, and they gave birth to a child. And then they had another boy. As soon as he had a healthy boy, DeSalvo appeared to become a conscientious family man. And
conscientious objector?
No, just a family man. And liked and appreciated by colleagues and his boss. So it kind of sounds like he has a personality change once he has his kid. When he reenlisted, he was eventually accused of molesting a 9-year-old girl while stationed at Fort Dix. The parents never pressed charges and he was discharged again. After the second discharge in 1956, DeSalvo was arrested for robbery twice. And then, as a young man in the late 1950s, DeSalvo acquired the first of his criminal nicknames, the Green Man. Okay, so now let's just jump back to 1965. Albert DeSalvo's an inmate now at a state mental hospital, and he has a big history of burglary dating from the 1950s, and he just confessed to the New England murders. Apparently, another inmate convicted murderer, George Nassar, turned DeSalvo into the authorities as the Boston Strangler, and it was in order to collect the reward that was offered for information concerning the stalking murders. But it is speculated that the two worked out a deal to split reward money if one of them confessed to being the Boston Strangler. Part of the reward money would be sent to DeSalvo's wife, and then the other part, I think Nassar would get. So DeSalvo then confessed to his attorney, F. Lee Bailey, who represented DeSalvo on the Green Man crimes, for which he was found guilty and received a life sentence. And through DeSalvo's ability to describe the murders in a very accurate detail, Bailey believed that DeSalvo was in fact the strangler. After hours of questioning, DeSalvo described the murders, all the murders, in detail of the victims' apartments, what they wore, and just details that other people would not know. And so the police were then convinced that they had the killer. Despite his confession, there was no physical evidence that actually linked Albert DeSalvo to the silk stocking murders. Police brought the Strangler's one surviving victim, Gertrude Grün, to the prison to identify the man that she fought off as he attempted to strangle her. To observe her reaction, the police brought two men through the prison lobby. The first was Nassar and the second was DeSalvo. Grün said that the second man, DeSalvo, was not the man. However, when she saw Nassar, the first man, she felt that something upsetting and something frighteningly familiar sparked something about her, about him. And she insisted that George Nassar was her attacker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so DeSalvo wasn't ever actually charged with the killings because they couldn't find anything to physically link him to the murder. I know we were saying how his attorney... Bailey thought that he was guilty because he could describe everything in great detail. And I think we were watching a documentary about this and they mentioned specifically that there's a lot of controversy. They kind of think he just confessed. Well, so they thought that he was like a man that liked to brag a lot and he confessed this murder and they were like, there's no evidence actually linking you to it. Like you might just be confessing, but then he knew a lot of details and they thought that was weird. But when you actually look into his like accounts of everything, he actually also does have a lot of details that are completely wrong. So there's some that are completely wrong, but some that are spot on. So as like a test, they were saying that they made three questions that they said that only the killer would know, like very specific details about things that they found like behind a bookcase at the murder scene or like something that fell off that only the killer would know. And they said that DeSalvo got all five for five. So after that, they were like, oh, that's kind of hard to deny. But that still isn't physical evidence. It's still just hearsay. So they still couldn't actually physically link him to the murder. But he was still convicted on charges of sexual assault. So under a deal with prosecutors, DeSalvo never was charged or convicted for the Boston Strangler murders, getting a life sentence instead for the Green Man rapes. Through it all, DeSalvo's wife, family, and friends never believed he was capable of actually being the strangler. They just didn't think he had it in him. Albert DeSalvo was sent to Massachusetts Correctional Institution, maximum security prison in Walpole in 1967 to serve his sentence. However, 6 years later, he was stabbed to death in his cell, and no one knows who actually killed DeSalvo. But a lot of people think that he was killed in there to keep him quiet and to keep the truth buried. A lot of people think it was like an outside job, a contract job. Because they didn't want him talking out because they might have something to lose. So he died. And at this point in time, nearly 50 years later, no one has actually ever been charged as the Boston Strangler. So like we said, a lot of people described him as being like a very boastful man. He loved to brag and one-up everyone. Like the documentary we were watching, they were like, if you told him that you robbed a bank, he'd turn around and tell you, like, he robbed 20, even if he never did. Like, he was just that kind of guy. And I feel like we all know a guy like that. But he was so thirsty for fame that some people think he claimed to be the strangler just for the fame of it, even if he didn't actually do it. It's all very messy.
We all know a guy like that.
We all know a guy like that who will claim that he killed people. No. Just a twisted point. A twisted point, I guess. They mentioned that he capitalized on his fame in prison by selling homemade choker necklaces. Which, A, how do you make a choker necklace in prison? I guess maybe they have arts and crafts time.
Maybe, but also, okay, in my head I'm picturing, like, really big guys with, like, tattoos and, like, doing push-ups, and they're just wearing, like,
chokers.
A choker.
Yeah, so...
Because I'm also thinking of, like, the ones that are in today, like the lace ones.
I know, he's looking like, yeah, no. They were pretty ugly. They showed one on the TV. He wasn't great at it. But, like, yeah, can you imagine if he had his own Etsy?
Those things would be going for so much.
Yikes. So, yeah, clearly he's a man that doesn't mind the fame and the attention.
And he thrives off of it.
He thrives off of it. Yeah. He was viewed as a textbook case of a sexually motivated serial murderer, an ordinary man who was nevertheless capable of outbursts of savage violence. Yet DeSalvo's guilt was controversial at the time, like we talked about, and it's remained so up until now. His original confessions, for example, demonstrated ignorance for many aspects of the crimes, although he would later describe details that only the actual killer could have known, like we said. His testimony, according to some observers, could have been based on information provided to him by the police. So that's another thing that they mentioned, that some of the questions were very leading. So they're not sure if a lot of the details he got right were kind of given to him by police in a way. Furthermore, several victims who survived did not believe that he was their attacker.
So now we fast forward 50 years later. We're at the beginning of the 21st century now. DNA analysis of newly uncovered forensic evidence has offered the possibility of determining whether DeSalvo was guilty of the rape and murder of Mary Sullivan, who was the last victim commonly attributed to the Boston Strangler. Sullivan was strangled with her own stocking in her Beacon Hill apartment on Tony Charles Street. She was also sexually assaulted. Her killer left behind seminal fluids that were lifted from a maroon blanket her body was covered with. That remains the only DNA evidence in the entire Boston Strangler investigation. Six samples that the Boston Police Crime Lab's lead forensic scientist, Robert Hayes, preserved as he waited for technology to advance to the point where nuclear DNA could be positively matched to a suspect.
I think, just to chime in, what they were saying in the documentary was that for some reason, the samples that they had, like, originally, right after this case, they had sent off to a federal lab, and they were just never tested. So they had evidence in the beginning, but we don't really know why, it just wasn't tested. So that's why they couldn't physically link anyone to the case. And I guess now they're kind of getting a second chance at it. That was all I wanted to say.
You can keep going.
Thanks.
You're welcome. In July 2013, the Boston Police Department decided it was time to test out the preserved DNA. First, police had to make sure the Y chromosomes and those DNA samples were a familiar match to DeSalvo in order to convince a judge to let investigators disturb his grave. So BPD Sergeant Brian Albert, a surveillance expert, followed Albert DeSalvo's nephew, Tim DeSalvo, to his worksite in Boston and retrieved a water bottle he drank from and left behind. It was a match to the samples collected in the 1964 Beacon Hill murder, excluding 99.9% of the male population from suspicion in Mary Sullivan's killings. Hayes said, in pointing to Albert DeSalvo with near certainty, that he was the man responsible. Upon this discovery, the court ordered the exhumation of DeSalvo's body. Investigators took his body from Puritan Lawn Cemetery in Peabody, Mass., to make the final determination with DNA testing.
Hey, you got that right.
Yeah, I said Peabody. It right. Peabody.
Nice.
Thanks.
Killed it.
After extracting DNA from DeSalvo's femur and some of his teeth, it was determined that DeSalvo was the man who killed and raped Mary Sullivan. Hayes told ABC News, quote, "I knew science would one day provide us with answers in this case. And those answers provided comfort to the nephew Mary Sullivan never met, Boston author Casey Sherman, who had long held that his aunt had been murdered not by DeSalvo, but by another man. He even wrote a book, A Rose for Mary, about the investigation he launched to help soothe his mother's nightmares. His mother, Diane, was just 17 when Mary Sullivan was murdered, and she continued to dream of her sister." And that's what he told ABC News. Quote, "I am grateful this brings closure to me and to my mother, most of all. For all these years, it was just me and her chasing this case. It took 49 years for police to say they legitimately got him."
Mm-hmm. However, Elaine Sharp, a lawyer for the DeSalvo family, insisted that police have not legitimately identified Albert as the Boston Strangler. She added that his nephew did not know he had been followed and inadvertently provided the evidence for the search warrant that will lead to the body being exhumed 30 years after it was buried. Just because they had DNA, Sharp said, doesn't mean Albert DeSalvo killed her. So I think what she's saying is, even though they found his DNA at the crime scene and on her, doesn't technically mean that he killed her. It just means that he was there with her, but meh. Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley dismissed that assertion, saying, "We may have solved one of the nation's most notorious serial killings." The Boston Strangler case, which inspired a 1968 Hollywood movie starring Tony Curtis, don't know him, marked a terrifying swath of history in the city and one that has long been mired in doubt. So that's kind of creepy that...
Yeah, some say he did, some say he didn't.
I mean, in my opinion, finding his DNA on the Mary Sullivan, who was sexually assaulted and killed, yeah, I don't know if it directly says that he killed her, but I mean, I think pretty much that says that he killed her. But that only says that he killed her. It doesn't say...
Was he a copycat? Did he just admire somebody? Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, a lot of people do think that there was more than one killer in this case. And like one of the things that they point to the most is that the victims ranged like greatly in age,
and usually hair they have color. Like the same victim preference.
Right. You can't. Yeah, they didn't have a preference. It was any kind of. Well, it's a woman, but. Like I said, any age, any looks, any nationality, they didn't have a preference, which you can't rule out, but is extremely rare.
Especially in serial killings, yeah.
For a serial killing, usually they have a pattern at least, or they kind of progress onto something, but...
An MO.
An MO, if you will. They didn't really have one. So a lot of people think it was more than one person, or like you said, copycat. So yeah, it's kind of sad that we don't have an answer still to this day, concrete answers anyway. And I mean, I don't think we will at this point, because we've kind of used up all of our resources, like including DNA evidence. So DeSalvo got what he wanted, because we're talking about him.
Exactly. Let us know what you guys think.
Yeah. I've never really known anything about this. I mean, I feel like you always hear about the Boston Strangler. Like, if you just hear about it.
But I didn't know the story.
Scranton Strangler. You've heard of him.
Yeah.
Have you?
The Office.
Okay. I was like, I didn't know if you thought it was a real curler.
No. It's Toby.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that? Those?
That's like a fan theory that Toby is a Scranton.
Because he's like gone on like, it's either vacation or something. But then he's actually, he doesn't end up going on vacation because he gets hurt. So he's in the hospital. So he's in the area at the time. So he
doesn't have an alibi.
Guys, it's Toby.
Remember, he's like, oh, I'm on the jury. I really can't talk about it. He's like, but I'll tell you every detail. He's always talking about it. Anyway, though. Yeah, I'd always heard about the Boston Strangler, but I never knew anything about it, to be honest with you. And I didn't know that they never found anyone for it. That's quite unfortunate. You know what one good thing is? We don't wear nylon hoses. Nylon hoses? Is that what they call them?
Hose.
Hose. We don't wear nylons anymore. So that's good, I guess.
I guess. Aren't they just tights?
Yeah.
Well, they're like the tights. We do wear tights though sometimes.
No, they're not tights though. They're like the ones we wore. The secret ones.
Yeah. Like the I don't wear skin those. Ones.
You wear those?
No, I don't wear those.
Exactly.
But some people still do. They still sell them.
Well, guys, you shouldn't stop wearing them.
That's why I don't wear heels.
Because someone could stab you with it?
No, because you can't run.
Oh.
What movie? Oh, what was it? It was like She's the Man. She is a he at the time, and he's like, heels are a man's invention designed to
make your butt look better.
No, make you run slower so men can catch you.
Yikes, that's like dark.
Yeah, that's
but also kind of true. Amanda Bynes, I really hope you make it, girl.
Same.
Just have that comeback that we're all waiting for.
We're all rooting for you.
We really are. Yikes, what a great movie.
Yeah, I really liked that movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What's the one where she goes to visit her dad, who's like royalty?
Oh, not The Prince in Me.
No.
It's like, it's the one where she falls in love with that
guy. Yes, yeah, yeah. Oh my god, it's so good.
I'm gonna look it up, because that's gonna kill me.
Wait, don't tell me. Come on, wait.
Okay, I'll give you a hint.
Am I gonna?
It's like a song.
Oh! What a Girl Wants!
Yeah.
Oh my god. I want to watch that so bad. I love that movie.
That's a good movie. Movies just aren't what they used to be.
It's because Amanda Bynes left.
That's solely the reason
that movies
went down. We figured out. There you go, Hollywood.
All the Oscars suck now.
Get it together. All right, well, that's all we have for you guys.
Yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this one. Sorry, we couldn't visit any sites.
Yeah, there's really
we're not going to go to their apartments. Not really much to do there, but
I wonder if even they still exist. They might even be like different buildings.
The apartments, probably. Like, there are some old ass houses in Boston.
Well, we've been to Boston before.
Yeah, so. I mean, what are we going to do? But we'll have some more soon where we go visit them.
Yes.
Once again, thank you to Serial Killustration.
Thank you so much
for album art.
Love it.
And yeah, guys, send us emails, killerbabespodcast@gmail.com. Instagram, follow us. Oh, well, I guess if they're listening to us, they would already know. And plus, we've already said it a ton on social media.
But if you didn't know,
did get picked up by Apple Podcasts. Thanks, Apple. It is about time.
Yeah. And actually, Apple was very helpful.
Yeah, they were helpful. But now we're available on all major platforms wherever you get your podcasts. But you probably figured that out because you're here.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for joining. And we will catch you next week unless you had anything else to say.
Catch you on the flip side.
Yep, on the flippity side. Bye, guys.
Bye.